Welcome to the big interview on the September 17th edition of Money Life. Joining me now, Warren Pearson. He is co-chief investment officer at the Baird Funds. Baird Funds, specialists in fixed income, though their funds cover the whole gamut. And you can learn more about the funds at BairdFunds.com. You can learn more about the firm at RWBaird.com. Warren Pearson's been on a lot on the show, but he hasn't been on since Morningstar 2023. But I can tell you, it's always a good day when I get to say, Warren Pearson, welcome back to Money Life.
Thank you, Chuck, and plenty to talk about in the bond market. So happy to be back with you.
Yeah, there sure is, because, of course, we have to start with the news that we expect to get this week, that being Fed finally going to take a step and cut rates. We assume it's going to be a small step. So I want the absolute shortest Fed answer you can give me, because the real question is, how's the bond market going to respond when the Fed does what you think it does?
Yeah, you know, that's always, we're not trying to get out ahead and necessarily and always determine what the bond market's going to do, but we try to step back and, you know, I don't want to spend a lot of time, will it be 25 basis points or 50 basis points? But I think more importantly is the Fed is pivoting to more of a normal posture, you know, looking for heading towards a neutral rate. And that neutral rate, you know, what is that? Somewhere 3% or a little bit north of there. But the key, I think, with that heading toward a more normal posture, you're going to see a more normal bond environment. And one of the indications there is just a more normal shaped curve. The inversion, which had persisted, a 2 to 10 year inversion had persisted for over 2 years. You know, just within the last week or so, we've got a slight positive slope there, but we think that will continue going forward.
In terms of where yields will get to and what investors should be thinking about, you know, not that I expect my audience to remember, but we gave you credit because you were the first one to talk about it on the show. And I'm not sure anybody else ever did. When the market moved from Tina, there is no alternative to Patty, pay attention to the yield. That was an interview we did in 2022. And then quite honestly, you didn't have to pay attention to the yield because everything was doing decent on yield because rates had come up so much. But now we're going to be in a rate cutting environment. If we're paying attention to the yield, where are we going to find the best yields? If we have to go worry about Patty again, where are we taking her to dance?
Yeah, and again, the Fed is going to a more normal posture. So, you know, it's worth noting that the last decade and a half, the Fed has been anything but normal. I mean, they kept rates at their zero target for the better part of a decade, then, you know, shifted to a really excessively restrictive policy. Now they're going back to normal. So we would expect to see yields on the short end of the curve fall. And the market's already anticipating this. The 2 years down to a 3.55 today after being, you know, 5%. And the 10-year is fallen about 75 basis points, you know, to about, call it 3 5/8 today. That's really since June 30th. So, you know, we've seen a strong bond market so far in the third quarter. And I think the conventional wisdom is that, once the Fed starts easing, you know, the market's going to rally across the entire curve. A lot of that has already happened. We'd be a little bit more cautious and think that while short-term rates are going to be falling, there could be some upward pressure on long-term yields. So I think investors want to be a little bit aware of that and maybe, you know, not go too far out in duration.
In terms of bond types, any specific sweet spot opportunities, any place that we would expect more than any other?
Well, good question. And again, when we say there's good value in the bond market, it's really the overall level of yields and primarily treasury yields. We are overweight corporate bonds, but just slightly so. Yield spreads on non-treasury sectors have come in, you know, for the most part this year. So, you know, we're fairly selective, want to stay a bit up in quality, want to keep some powder dry. And again, the corporate credit fundamentals are very solid. Banking system's in good shape. So, you know, we're not seeing any imminent problems on the horizon. But spreads are not that terribly attractive. So we're a little bit more conservative than normal and just see good value with the overall level of interest rates.
You know, you talked about how rates will come down at the short end, which means if that happens, that we get the disinversion, uninversion, whatever you call it, of the yield curve finally. Do you have a take on why, at least to this point, the inverted yield curve has not produced its standard side effect, that being a recession?
Yeah, I think it's a very good question. And, you know, it could still produce a recession. You know, we see the unemployment rate rise by more than a half a percentage point. That's been a pretty good harbinger of a recession. It also can change the mood on a lot of, you know, management teams at companies. They become a bit more cautious. But we would say, you know, and again, it's a toss-up in our opinion. Will it just be, will we avoid a recession? Will there be a soft landing? Even if there is a recession, we don't see it as being a very deep or, you know, severe recession. Nobody's really upside down the way they were before the global financial crisis. Consumers, while it's a very bifurcated experience, you know, those of us that have a house and an investment portfolio, life is good. Those that are looking to buy a house and don't have an investment portfolio, the pinch is on. You know, they've felt the increase of, you know, rising costs of staples and that they, you know, need to spend money on every month. But overall, you roll it all together, the American consumer is in pretty good shape. The economy is continuing to chug along. We don't see a deep recession coming.
From the standpoint of a bond investor, deep recession is one thing. Long kind of slowdown is another. I mean, we lived through a very long period of almost zero interest rates, which, of course, was not exactly great for the bond market. How much do you worry that, fine, we won't have some significant recession, but whenever we get into this, we're going to wind up seeing the rate cutting cycle. And then, oh, by the way, you know, we will wind up going back towards what we had.
I think the thing that we're encouraged about and the whole reason that, you know, that everybody's having discussions about the Fed cutting rates is inflation has really come down considerably. It's not out of control anymore. You know, I wouldn't go so far as to say, hey, the Fed's got complete control of inflation, but they've made very good progress. And, you know, that last mile, and what we mean by that is getting inflation from, say, 3-ish% down to 2%. That's the target that the Fed has expressed. And whether they'll remain committed to that, time will tell. I mean, maybe they'll think, hey, we've got inflation below 3%. That's good enough. It's not worth the pain that we'd have to inflict on the economy to get it down to 2%. So we'll see how that all shakes out. But the key is inflation is down and there's actually real yields you know, available to investors. And investors have taken notice of that. And we think that's a big part of the reason why you've seen such strong flows into the bond market this year.
Here we are talking about inflation and you are a bond expert. And I got to tell you one thing that has surprised me as we've watched inflation get up, which is with one notable exception, which was a very short period where I bonds were paying ridiculously high rates. The truth is, inflation-protected securities have not been a big story in a time of high inflation. Kind of the same way that, by the way, gold, which has not really worked as a hedge against inflation, has not been a big story. Is there a reason, a functional reason, why at a time with the highest inflation we've seen for years, everybody hasn't been talking about inflation-protected bonds?
I think it could get back to, you know, the question of why people own bonds. And this is part of the normalization that we're talking about, that people are now owning bonds for the reasons that they historically have owned bonds or the normal reason for owning a bond. And that is the income that they can produce. And I think what, you know, when TIPS first came out, you know, they were akin to zero coupons. They were, you know, very low coupons. And, you know, I think there were some people that wanted to hedge against inflation, maybe wanted to try to make a market call by, you know, buying inflation bonds. But oftentimes the inflation bonds just don't offer as much income. And now I think in particular with the rest of the bond market offering what we think are pretty attractive levels of interest or yields, I think that's a part of the reason there hasn't been as much focus on TIPS and other inflation type bonds.
Does that mean that TIPS maybe don't work as well as people thought they would?
TIPS are, we think, one of the probably most misunderstood instruments out there. I think a lot of people, you know, loaded up on TIPS thinking, oh, you know, when inflation rises, interest rates are really going to rise, and that's going to offer me a lot of protection. What they found is in 2022, when nominal treasuries underperformed, TIPS maybe outperformed treasuries by a bit, but they didn't offer protection against rising interest rates. So, you know, TIPS really do offer good protection against inflation, but they're not a good, you know, hedge against rising interest rates. And I think some people have found that out and, you know, have maybe lost some interest in TIPS because of that.
One of the things that I've heard from a couple of different bond experts has been that, you know, we've managed to get this far into the cycle and not see some significant wave of defaults. Little bit of increase in defaults, but not much. And yet, I've talked to one or two people who think that, okay, even though the Fed is about to cut, the rate cuts will not bring relief to those folks who have just been hanging on and getting to the edge this long. Do you think that we're going to see an increase in defaults, oddly, at the time when rates start to go down?
Yeah, I think if you're looking at, you know, talking about the corporate market or the banking sector, again, we're coming into this, whatever the slowdown looks like, in good shape. Company balance sheets are in good shape. The banking system is in good shape. Consumers overall are in good shape. Again, at the margin, I would say weaker consumers that have had to rely upon debt. You know, the stimulus checks were spent and they don't have cash. You'll see credit card balances going up. You'll see the default rate and delinquencies going up on credit cards and auto loans, but not in a real significant way, or I should say coming off of, you know, almost non-existent delinquencies. So, yes, there probably will be an increase in some delinquencies, possibly in the default rate, but we're not looking for any significant increase, you know, certainly in the corporate market. Things are still in pretty good shape and in good shape to weather the slowdown, whatever that looks like.
We've had foreign central banks who started cutting rates before the Fed, obviously. Now that the Fed is joining the picture, what's your take on the international bond market? I mean, it was a place that people were looking for yields, but whether it's what the rate picture and the rest is doing for the Japanese carry trade and all those other sorts of things, right now, is there no place like home for bond investors?
Well, and in full disclosure, we are more of a U.S.-centric investor. I mean, we have exposure to foreign bonds, but they're all dollar-denominated. And it can get a little bit tricky. I mean, with the central banks, you highlighted Japan. The Japan carry trade kind of got blown out of the water. So, you know, we tend to like staying at home. And we think there's really good value. One doesn't need to travel abroad to find good value in the bond market. If you look at treasury yields relative to other sovereign yields, still look pretty attractive. So on a risk-adjusted basis, we think there's, we would stay closer to home and think there's pretty good value right here in the U.S.
We've come this far into the interview, and I suspect I know the answer to this question well before I ask it. But how much, if at all, does politics factor into anything that you have said? And do you worry or factor in one side or the other winning the election as for what it may or may not do to the bond market?
Well, it's a really good question. And there's certainly different policies on both sides of the ticket. And it's a pretty close election so far. So, you know, we're not going to step out in a big way and bet our portfolios on one outcome or the other. One of the things, though, that we've noticed that is surprisingly absent from this election is just talk about the deficit and the amount of federal debt outstanding. I mean, we have increased the federal debt at a significant, you know, tripled it over the last couple decades. It's not sustainable. Our suspicion is that after the election, certainly before the next election, there's going to be more of a focus on the budget deficit, and, the challenges there. So regardless of which party wins, we think there's probably going to be an increase in taxes, you know, just the increase in Social Security and Medicare, Medicaid, and now servicing the interest on the federal debt. All three of those components of the budget look to be doubling over the next decade. That's going to put a tremendous amount of stress on discretionary. So will we be able to cut any spending there? Even if we do, we're still going to have to raise taxes, I think, if we're going to get serious about attacking the deficits at all. So that would be more of a concern of ours.
Ultimately, how does the bond market respond to that? Because, I mean, depending on which type of bonds you're buying with tax considerations in mind. So what's the likely response of the bond market and for you as a bond investor when you wind up seeing whatever tax proposals come down their line?
Yeah, I think you've seen it a little bit. The bond market is anticipating this. A lot of people look at municipal bonds and they'll look at the AAA municipal scale relative to treasuries. And those ratios have come up a bit in the last couple of months, but they're still not screaming cheap. And I think that's part of the reason is the market's looking beyond just that sort of base level of evaluating how attractive munis are. And I think there's already the anticipation that there's going to be increased taxes at the federal level. And so, we think there's good value in the municipal market, and you're starting to see the flows turn around a bit more positive there. You know, we think that municipals, especially for the higher wage earners, probably makes sense to be looking at those.
You and I have frequently met at the Morningstar Conference, which I did not attend this past year, but I do plan to attend in 2025. So if you and I don't speak between now and then, and we're talking about spring-ish of 2025, what do you think the Fed will have done by then? Like, what's your best guess for how happy or sanguine about the bond market you're going to be when we have that next conversation face to face in Chicago?
Yeah, I think investors will be happy with the bond market again because of the level of interest rates. And we're talking, 6 months down the road, they'll have a half of year of income. That's really what drives the returns. I think we will see the Fed cut interest rates fairly significantly over the next year. You know, we're going to see Wednesday, whether it's 25 or 50. And there's a number of people saying, hey, they've maybe been a little bit slow in doing this. But again, they're looking to that ultimate neutral rate of 3-ish%, maybe a little bit higher than that. And I think they can take their time getting there, but with inflation much more well-behaved, they might want to move on that as well to try to avoid the recession, you know, the negative impact on the economy. So I think you're going to see the short end of the curve come down pretty significantly over the next, you know, 6 to 12 months.
Warren, great stuff. Always is when we get a chance to chat. I am looking forward to seeing you, which likely will happen at Morningstar. But whenever we talk again, right, I'm sure I'll be happy. Thanks for taking the time to join me on Money Life.
Always a pleasure, Chuck. We look forward to it.
That's Warren Pearson. He's the co-chief investment officer for the Baird Funds. BairdFunds.com, their website, rwbaird.com for the firm, and at rwbaird on Twitter. And we are past the halfway pole on this show, but we still have lots to go, including the Money Life Market Call. Bernie Horn from Polaris Global Value is coming, so stick around, because we're living the money life, and we're back at it in just a moment.